Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher, 8:06 on this Tuesday. It's April 22nd. Currently, we've got 40 degrees here in Old Town Park City, and in Heber City, reporting 42 degrees under mostly sunny skies. On the phone with us from the ABC Forecast Center, meteorologist Nate Larson. Good morning, Nate.
Hey, good morning, Leslie. Good morning, Park City, Heber City, Wasatch Back. We've got a beautiful day in store for your Earth Day. Temperatures are climbing. It's a little cooler this morning from yesterday, just following the front that moved through, but should rebound nicely to the upper 50s in Park City. Sunshine throughout the daytime, but we will start to see clouds increase later tonight as the sun goes down after those upper 50s for highs. In fact, a chance of rain moving in on Wednesday. We'll see overnight lows near 39, low 60s for highs in the afternoon. Showers off and on. Not a huge threat for any heavy downpours or anything. It's fairly light precipitation, if much of anything. It's a pretty weak amount of moisture moving up from the southwest. Southwest flow is going to stay in place, and moisture will continue to move through it into Thursday. So we'll keep a chance of rain in the mix. Isolated shower potential Wednesday, Thursday. Partly cloudy Friday, Saturday. I'd be surprised if we see any moisture those 2 days, but another storm system moves in Sunday into Monday. That should drop temperatures pretty significantly and bring more rain and snow showers back down to the Wasatch Back. Temperatures in the mid-30s for overnight lows as we get into Sunday morning. 49 for the high, freezing into Monday morning with 46 for the high. So chance of some snowflakes certainly possible Monday morning. In Heber, 66 for the high with sunshine, showers potential at least for tomorrow and Thursday. Again, very isolated in nature, will be hit miss. Temperatures should stay in the upper 60s Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday, Saturday. So no big changes with temperatures over the next several days, even with some of that moisture moving in because of that southwest flow. Partly cloudy Friday, Saturday, and then showers on Sunday. We drop to 57 for the high, so about 10 degrees cooler, and then 54 for the high on Monday with overnight lows in the mid to low 30s. So snow showers, if not a wintry mix, certainly possible in the morning hours.
Okay, Nate, thank you.
You bet.
Well, stay tuned. Coming up on the local news hour this morning, I'll be checking in with Summit County Manager Shane Scott. He'll preview the agenda for Wednesday's county council meeting. Later on, a representative from Timpanogos Valley Theater, Abby Scott, will be calling in, telling us more about the production of Little Women, a Broadway musical. It's on stage there in Heber City through May 3rd. Live Like Sam Programs Director Jessica Parker with details on Saturday's free community event, Leading with Kindness, and Dr. Elizabeth Ritter with details about a free head and neck cancer screening. That's in honor of April's Head and Neck Cancer Awareness Month. The Summit County Council meets Wednesday, starting in work session at 11:15 to interview the 13 applicants for vacancies on the Summit County Housing Authority. In the studio with a preview of the meeting, I have Summit County Manager Shane Scott. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
So 13 applicants, but just 2 public seats on the Housing Authority. Any idea why so much interest in this?
Well, I think it's reflective of the housing conversation we continue to have in our community, that people legitimately care about housing. They would like to shape that. And, of course, that could mean a lot of different things. It could mean that folks don't want any more people moving to our community, or it could mean we've got to accommodate people of all kinds in our community. So I think we'll probably try to flesh that out tomorrow. And you know, I'm sure every council member has an individual a thought about who would be best to serve on that committee, whether it's someone that lives in affordable housing, someone that has experience in their profession with affordable housing, someone that just has built affordable housing. So,
yeah, and that's what I was going to ask. I mean, what do you think the council's looking for in these 2 members? I mean, because, of course, among the applicants, I see an architect, a former planning commissioner, a realtor, and a housing navigator.
Yeah. And that's great. I think those are all kind of exciting. If you remember the very first time we brought the bylaws to the council, we talked about making it contingent on where someone lives geographically in the community. So that might be something that one council member might feel strongly about, having someone from the east side of the basin. Having those experience and those professional realtor or a general contractor, those kinds of things might be advantageous to us as well. So I think everybody's going to probably feel differently. Probably after with 13 individuals, it might be something to focus on just getting a person that's very available, that they're very interested. We really want to hit the ground running this first year. We want to get some some strategic plans operational, and we want them to really digest what we're doing with housing. I think it's a really interesting time to do this because we've just had that housing conversation back in March where we set a standard or a goal of a certain number of units. It would be great to have the Housing Authority involved in that discussion. How can we best meet that goal? Can we incentivize communities on the east side to deed restrict their housing as well? So lots to talk about, and how exciting it is. What a good problem to have, I guess I should say, when we have 13 applicants for two spots.
All right, now we just have, the council has just named the new housing director, Madeline McDonough, so she will be overseeing the housing authority?
Yes, I think one of her duties will be the executive director. She does have a passion for housing. That was one thing that stood out in her interview and application. And so I'm very excited that she's, I don't know if you, Leslie, if you know her personally, but she's going to be outstanding in that role and is very well suited to, you know, make presentations and to lead that housing authority.
All right, you've got 3 hours of interviewing these applicants. That's quite a bit. The council will then reconvene at 4:45 to make those two appointments, as well as they've named somebody for the Board of Health as well.
That's right. That's a recommendation I'm making to the council to appoint that Board of Health member.
Okay. Later on, a work session at 5 o'clock with continued discussion on what's known as the Gun Club Road. There was no staff report for this item when I was looking, and we haven't heard much about this recently, so what's the latest?
Well, maybe just a little bit of background. There is two primary communities right over the Summit County border in Wasatch County. One is Toohey. I think a lot of people are familiar with Toohey. The other one is Wakara. And where Toohey is mostly built out at this point, Wakara is just kind of getting started. And so we've had some complaints on that road, Gun Club Road, 200 South there, that is in the unincorporated part of the Camas Valley, very close to the Ur Ranch, where we have an option to purchase for open space purposes. But we've had some complaints about traffic, about dust, about big heavy trucks, about speeding on that road. And because Toohey has a secondary access on 248, many individuals were asking why this was so much traffic on Gun Club Road. Wakara, on the other hand, is a separate development, and they don't have that same access that Toohey has to access 248. So this is their primary access on Gun Club Road, which was used to be the old Camas Highway before 248 was in. So we've gone back and forth with Wakara trying to mitigate dust, trying to mitigate speeds. They've made some effort in limiting less traffic. Once Toohey completed most of their construction, I think some traffic was better, but it's really a challenging situation when you have a development right over the border. And on the Summit County side, it's very rural, and we like to keep it that way. The ranch, obviously, is an acquisition we're not developing. So it has a really distinct character. And then on the other side, we have hundreds of units. So it's a real challenging situation. We're trying to work with the developer on solutions. They've asked to be in front of the council. We've gone back and forth on some of our solutions, and we haven't come to any consensus. So we invite the public to pay attention. I think we are possibly taking some public comment if anything's changed over the past year or so. But right now we're going at this trying to be respectful of that the character of that area and the residents that live in that area.
Is closing the road to Wakara off the table then?
I don't think anything's off the table. I think this is, I'm speaking just for myself in this instance right now, that I was under the impression that Toohey, when we first received these complaints, that Toohey was the development over there. I didn't know that Wakara existed. I'm new to the community. I think that many other people didn't know Wakara existed either. It's nothing we entitled. It's on the Wasatch County side. So when we first started talking about closing that road, we were trying to force all the development to come off of 248, which I think made a lot of sense. Since then, I've understood that Wakara does not have the same access that Toohey does to 248. That has changed the conversation somewhat with me. Doesn't mean we can't go out there and, as the Highway Authority, limit speeds and even throw up a guardrail. That may have some consequences to it, that action. So we're trying to be collaborative. We're trying to have some kind of consensus with the developer. So that's our first effort. If worse comes to worse, I guess we can throw a gate up there and see what happens.
Yeah. So why can't it use Toohey for access?
I think they would tell you, and they've told us, that they have negotiated that with Toohey in an effort to do that, and they just don't have, they don't have a legal right to it, and they've been trying to get Toohey to give them permission to do so. They do have a emergency access. They can get through there. I think it's gated. I think it has a gate up, so they can't just go out there with their primary access. But they've told us they've made that effort with Toohey to negotiate that and have been unsuccessful.
Yeah. And if WCAR doesn't, if the county council comes up with a solution that WCAR doesn't like, I mean, do they have the right to sue?
Well, and that's probably where I go back to the gating situation. I don't think they have a right to sue if we don't allow them to pave the road, which is what they would like to do. We just can leave it dirt, and we can leave it like it is, and we can limit speeds. And as the Highway Authority, I think we could probably even limit what's called a gross vehicle weight, or GVW. We could limit that as well. Understanding that they are still in the construction phase, they probably do need big trucks to access that. So can they sue? For sure. Anybody can almost sue anybody for any reason. I don't think they'd have a great case if we just left that road completely alone like it is, and I think a lot of the residents would be happy with that, except that there is dust, and there is speeding, and there is large traffic, and that's probably going to continue to be untenable for many of the residents.
Yeah, I guess my understanding was that the county offered to let WCAR pave it, maintain it, and use it, just not for construction traffic, and they refused?
That's where we are today, and that's probably what we're going to need to hear back from them, is that we'd like them. I think they've made some efforts to have a secondary access that would be construction access only, and they may or may not have been successful in that endeavor. So that's kind of what we need to hear, is what have you done to try and get all the construction traffic off of this road? And if they were successful, I think the county was willing to talk about paving that road if it was done to a standard that we were happy with, and if they would continue to maintain it in perpetuity, them, and I think Wasatch County was actually interested in being a partner there, since this has been kind of a tricky negotiation.
So what is WCAR's proposal? I mean, it sounds like they just want to be able to use it like they have been.
Well, I think if you ask them, they would say that if they could pave the road and use it for any purpose, that would be their ideal. I think that right now does not work for Summit County.
Yeah, and I'm guessing that Camas area residents may think anything short of closing the Gum Club Road is kind of caving into the developer's interests. Are they wrong?
I do think they're wrong in that it's a much more complicated situation than just simply that. And I've had a lot of conversations with them personally, and I think they're a reasonable bunch of folks that understand that this isn't just something we can, again, we can throw up a gate. It's just going to have some consequences, and we don't know exactly what those are. So we can do that. That's still on the table. But at the end of the day, I think the residents in that area have understood that we're trying to be collaborative. We'd like to find a solution that works for both parties, and if we can do that, that's going to be our primary objective.
Okay, we've been on this, I mean, dealing with this for a while now. I mean, so when does the county make a decision?
Well, I think as soon as we make a proposal that WCAR will accept, and that we've actually gone back and forth with even language on some kind of an agreement. So the problem is the details of that agreement we haven't come to consensus with. So attorneys have gone back and forth. We've probably got the bones of an agreement, if you will, and we're ready to go. But I don't have a hurry. I don't know. I don't think the county council is really interested in doing something drastic here. If it's the status quo, I think we're okay with that. If as long as we have, you know, speeds that are appropriate. We've had the sheriff out there a great deal trying to do that. And then, of course, over the summer, it's probably going to be a little dusty. But I think a lot of the residents wouldn't mind having that road stay like it is if we could manage some traffic there.
All right. At 6 o'clock, a discussion and public input session on House Bill 356, basically changing how Summit County residents will elect their county council members. Are these input sessions required?
No, I think one of the pieces of feedback we gave the legislature during this session when this was addressed is we haven't had a time to even have a conversation with our community about do they want our county council to be in districts. So we're trying to be respectful of that feedback we gave them and listen to our community. And And we had a meeting last Tuesday and a week ago today in Colville with the Council of Governments, the mayors and the county council, and we heard from the community and it was overwhelmingly in favor of districts at that meeting. It'll be interesting what happens on Wednesday. Again, I always take public comment with a grain of salt. I think there's a lot of people that would like to see districts. I think there's a lot that would prefer to be able to vote for all five of their county council members as opposed to one at a time. I think that's a real change that people aren't addressing 100%. So we're interested in what people have to say, and they can always email comments as well.
Yeah, so are there options here? I mean, do there have to be five districts, or can you have four districts and an at-large seat?
I think those things are possible. Excuse me. We did hear a pretty resounding, we need five districts. And if you think about the districts, if they are based on population, if we have five, that will allow the districts to be smaller. And then if you're looking at trying to have a district in North Summit and South Summit, the district will be more contained to that area if there are five districts as opposed to four or three. I would prefer three districts and two at large. That would be my preference. That might be a tough sell when we get to the negotiation table. So because of the interim session, because Wasatch County was affected by this bill, we have an opportunity here to soften it, I think, and we have some things that we'd like to do. I think at-large districts is one of those, but I think after Tuesday, there was less of an appetite to really push for that, and more we wanted to really focus on how these districts are implemented. And then what's the makeup of the districting committee? Those are the kind of the two things we're really focused on right now.
All right. And as you mentioned, I mean, population is key here. So right now we would have two districts in the Snyderville Basin, one in Park City, one in South Summit, which would include Promontory. So is there enough population in Colville and Hennifer to create a district?
I don't think there is, and not even with five. So it would be that area, and that would probably be the majority of the population would still be in that area, but it would have to take some of the basin. And even in South Summit, I think that's still yet to be determined. How do we need to come into the basin at all? Do we come, you know, into the Richardson Flat? Or we just don't know yet. So and how that district, how those districts will be drawn will be very interesting to watch.
Yeah. All right. The interim session is when?
I believe it's the third week of May. We still don't have a date, but we are making an effort to interact with the legislators in between now and then. So we're trying to set up some meetings and hopefully we'll have some productive conversations.
All right. And any idea how the council is leaning here? You had mentioned that you would prefer three districts plus two at large.
Well, I don't know if there's 100% solid consensus on everything. Let me correct what I'd said. I'd rather this bill went away, what's realistic? And I think that there is going to be a bill that continues to be the law of the land. I think we need to make it as soft and as palatable as we can. And so is there consensus on, will this be a win if we have districts and Councilmember Hart is able to continue to serve in his seat? That might be a win to me right now, because right now it's possible that he won't even serve in his area, and that's to me very troubling.
Okay. Hey, anything else you wanted to mention?
I don't think so.
Okay. Shane, thanks so much.
Leslie, thank you. Nice to see you.
This is Summit County Manager Shane Scott. Well, based on Louisa May Alcott's life, Little Women, the Broadway musical opened Friday at Timpanogos Valley Theater. It'll run through Saturday, May 3rd. On the phone with details, I have one of the cast members, Abby Scott. Good morning, Abby. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, so tell us how the novel Little Women becomes a Broadway musical.
Yes, so it's a beautiful adaptation. The classic book really is such a special part of so many people's childhoods, and it's beautiful to watch it come to the stage. It's a musical, so it has multiple songs, and it follows the lead character, Jo, and her story and her family's story. So she has three sisters and her mother, and it follows their stories as they grow up and embrace all the challenges of losing family and also just learning that they have to let go of family and let them live their own dreams.
All right. So what part are you playing?
So I play Jo in one of the casts. We have two casts, the Concord cast and the Orchard cast, and I play Jo in the Concord cast.
Okay, and why are there two casts? Just because you have so many productions, just it's volunteer?
Yes, so it's a community theater production, and so they wanted to make sure that there was opportunity for the whole community to participate in it. It's also just amazing to see how much talent comes out of the Valley. Both casts are so incredible. The actors are so talented, and it's fun to see what Heber Valley has to offer.
And it sounds like several of the cast members play more than one role.
Yes, there's the show itself, and then Joe, her whole idea is that she has this dream of becoming a famous author. And so she tells these stories throughout the show. And as she tells the stories, they kind of come to life on stage. And so there's a cast that not only plays normal characters in the show, but also characters in Joe's story that she portrays.
Okay. So it sounds like, Abby, you've done lots of theater, huh?
Yes, I did a lot growing up, and I haven't done as much recently, but it's been really fun to get back into it.
All right. What are some of the other roles you've played?
One of my favorites was playing Winnie Foster in Tuck Everlasting and Marguerite in The Scarlet Pimpernel.
Okay. So who is, you have one director then directing both casts?
Yes. Her name is Kristen Hughes. She is a phenomenal director. She has this beautiful vision and she loves the book and has brought so many elements of it to the stage that are really unique that sometimes get looked over in the musical.
All right. As I mentioned, the performance opened last Friday, but performances will continue now Monday, Wednesday, Friday, and Saturdays through Saturday, May 3rd. I saw online that there's like a special dinner theater fundraiser happening this weekend. Can you tell us about that?
Yes. So TVT, where we are performing, is a beautiful social hall unique to Heber. And it's really fun that we get to perform in that space. And also, it is a unique historical building. And so it has a couple of updates that are really necessary to help the theater keep running and help actors be comfortable and the patrons be comfortable. So they're doing a dinner theater to be able to fundraise for that. And it's this Saturday. And you can buy individual tickets or you can buy a whole table for your family to come watch.
Great. Okay. And Timpanogos Valley Theater, located at 90th North, I think 100 West or East?
West.
Yeah. Okay. And let me see. The tickets are available online?
Yes, you can buy them either online at timpsvalleytheater.com or you can just buy them at the box office right before the show. Okay. They're $20 for reserved premiere seating or just $16 for general admission. And $12 for kids. And then we also have a special discount this Wednesday or any Wednesday for youth groups.
Okay. Anything else you want listeners to know?
No, we just love to see anyone there who wants to come. It really is such a heartfelt show, and you won't be able to stop yourself from laughing and crying and just enjoying it thoroughly. It really does touch the heart. So we'd love to see anyone there that wants to make it out.
Okay. Abby Scott, thanks so much for your time.
Thank you.
Well, the Wasatch-backed Major Crimes Task Force has arrested six people after uncovering a theft and drug ring spanning across Summit and Wasatch counties. KPCW's Grace Dorfler has more.
The six people are suspected in a series of vehicle burglaries, car thefts, and firearm and drug crimes over the past few months. Heber City Police said the task force executed search warrants April 17th at homes in Heber, where they found a substantial amount of stolen property and cash, multiple firearms, and drugs, including methamphetamines, crack cocaine, and marijuana. Officers said the stolen property may be linked to more than a dozen burglaries across Summit and Wasatch counties. The six people were booked into the Wasatch County Jail and could face charges for theft, possession with intent to distribute, failure to register as a sex offender, illegal possession of a firearm, forgery, and child endangerment. Law enforcement from the Heber City and Park City Police Departments, the Wasatch County Sheriff's Office, Immigration and Customs Enforcement, and the Utah Attorney General's Office assisted in the investigation and arrests. Grace Dorfler, KPCW News.
This Saturday, Live Like Sam, along with the Park City School District, Summit County Health Department, Park City Community Foundation, Holy Cross Ministries, Big Brothers, Big Sisters, Peace House, and Mountain Mediation Center offering a free community event at Woodward Park City. It's happening from 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. In the studio with details, I have Live Like Sam Programs Director, Jessica Parker. Good morning.
Good morning.
So this is an all-day event. not just for kids, but really for the whole family. So tell us what's happening.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. We're so excited about this event. So many of us community partners have been working hard to put on this impactful event for the community. So we've been working with a lot of student groups and local organizations to just gather like different perspectives around kindness, empathy, and anti-bullying. And we wanted to create this really interactive and engaging space for parents and students to come and learn about these different perspectives. So we have, we'll have tons of different exhibits, around 15 different exhibits from different clubs that are student-led or different organizations around like, what does kindness mean to you? Or talking about friendship or different like kindness versus unkind scenarios, being a bystander versus an upstander. And creating different like kindness messages. We just wanted to create a space to help with like this culture shift towards more acts of kindness in the schools. And so we did that by going into some classrooms with clubs and having like facilitating these conversations around kindness to just see what students feel passionate about. And then just walk them through creating an exhibit to help them push their message forward to the community and to provide their perspective around kindness, empathy, and anti-bullying. So yeah, just what to expect at the event at Leading with Kindness at Woodward this Saturday. We'll have parent workshops where we'll be facilitating different 30 to 45 minute workshops. One of them will be facilitated by myself. Live Like Sam will be around digital wellness and building healthy tech habits and building kindness in that digital world. Peace House is leading a Healthy Relationships 101 little workshop for 30 to 45 minutes. And then Mountain Mediation will be leading multiple circle times where they're facilitating conversations for parents and their children around kindness and empathy. So we'll have parent workshops. And while the parents are learning all these epic topics, their kids can go and take these free clinics at Woodward. So Woodward is leading free clinics, intro to skateboarding, intro to parkour, intro to trampoline. And so those workshops and clinics will be happening at the same time. And yeah, with the whole day, Woodward is opening their facilities for free to the community. We will also be providing free food for kids. And we have some really epic raffle prizes that we'll be giving out. So parents and students can earn raffle tickets as they go around to each exhibit and do an activity with their exhibit, you know, whether it's painting kindness rocks or doing these kindness scenarios. What else do we have? There's just some amazing things. We have some students who were interviewing like other students around their school to find out whether they're using the resources that they have to report on bullying and why or why not. And they were going to put a cool science fair sort of a board together to show the results of those of interviewing students on that topic. So there's lots to learn and lots to take away from this event. We're just really excited about it.
So for kids that want to come and enjoy some of the clinics that you've got, do they need to have anything other than just a signed release?
Yeah, exactly. So if they want to participate in this weekend's event, they can just show up at Woodward and come enjoy all the exhibits for free. And if they want to participate in any Woodward clinics or jump on the trampolines or ride some skateboards around there, they would just need to fill out a waiver at Woodward for that.
Sure. And you say it's a free day. Is there anything that needs to be paid for? Is that what adults would need to pay for from food? Or
yeah, if any adults want to eat, then that would be something that they would need to pay for. But everything else is completely free. And again, kids are eating for free as well.
Wow. Great deal.
Yeah.
So what are you guys hoping that you get out of doing this?
Yeah, that's a great question. We, our hope is to be able to just kind of back to like the conversations and building this event up. I think that the conversations that the students were having around kindness was the most important and impactful piece of this. We wanted them to just talk about like what they're seeing in their schools, what like why kindness is important, and how they can make an impact in their schools by just little acts of kindness, or how they can impact that culture shift by maybe not supporting the kid who is making fun of that other kid, right? Like we just had those conversations about like why people bully, why people are cruel to other people, like what crossing the, you know, what it means to like cross the line and those impacts on the recipients, like mental health. So we were just trying to like build perspective and gain perspective and have those important conversations. And
sure. And I guess, I mean, is there some way to learn about how to step in if you kind of witness some of that bullying going on?
Right. Yeah. So we, and that's, we'll have a couple booths and exhibits at the event around being a bystander versus an upstander and yeah, how to step in. And I think too, like I mentioned, that survey that some of the kids are doing around, you know, whether friends or whether individuals are reporting bullying for themselves or for their friends, like, and why or why not, and how that perspective can be so impactful for how we as a community can help shift what we're providing our students in that reporting.
Okay. Again, it's happening this Saturday, April 26th, 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. at Woodward Park City. Anything else, Jessica, you wanted to mention?
Yeah, so we have a few other programs coming up. Thrive registration is open until Wednesday, April 30th at midnight. Thrive is our free well-being skills program for 6th through 12th graders. Students are learning about their character strengths and how to apply them in their lives. They're learning how to create goals for their own well-being and strategies to building healthy relationships. Restructuring thought traps, just really essential life skills. It's a 6-week program. Students are joining a virtual Zoom meeting once a week with their peers. And this program is just, we're seeing reductions in symptoms of anxiety and symptoms of depression. We're seeing increases in youth resilience and quality of life. And they're learning from each other and they're sharing experiences and building that empathy as well. So that's our Thrive program. Again, registration closes on April 30th for 6th through 12th graders, a completely free program, and students can earn $60 when they complete the program. We will also be launching Thrive 2.0. So this is for our Thrive graduates to continue the journey and continue learning new well-being skills. And that will be an additional 6-week program that we'll be launching in May for Thrive graduates to just learn those new well-being skills. And we're really excited about that program coming up. One other thing we have is our digital wellness program where we are teaching students just how to have healthy tech habits in this digital world. We're talking about the impacts of social media on our lives and FOMO and on body image. We're talking about screen time and how to just build up some healthy habits and learn about, you know, why we're being so sucked into our phones and what we can do about it.
Okay. For those who are interested in the Thrive programs, just registration is online.
Yep. LiveLikeSam.org/Thrive. Yep.
Okay. Anything?
Thank you. Yeah, no, that's great. We hope to see you all this weekend on Saturday for Leading with Kindness to just gain some amazing perspective on youth in how they see kindness and empathy in their schools. And then again, some epic parent workshops, digital wellness, healthy relationships 101, and some circle times for parents and students to have good conversation.
Okay. Jessica Parker is the program's director for Live Like Sam. Thanks so much for your time.
Thank you so much.
Well, on Saturday, the Ear, Nose, and Throat Center of Utah will be hosting a free screening of head and neck cancer. In the studio with details, I have ENT surgeon Dr. Elizabeth Ritter. Good morning. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning. Thanks so much for having me.
Yeah, so when and where is the screening going to be held?
We actually did have to update the screening time. We actually are going to be doing it on Friday from 9 a.m. to 12 p.m. at our office in Heber.
Okay, and that's located where?
We are located right at the north side of Heber, right off Route 40. And just a lot of people know Back 40, so we're just kind of right across the street from there.
Okay. And do people need to register?
Nope. You can register if you want to let us know you're coming at our website, but feel free to just stop by. We take walk-ins, no appointments, no insurance needed, completely free for the community.
All right. So who's the screening for?
It's really for anyone. We're really targeting those people that may have noticed a lump in the neck or, you know, a sore throat that won't go away. But really, it's for everyone to sort of raise awareness about head and neck cancer. We're specifically trying to raise awareness for HPV-related head and neck cancer. Most people think about head and neck cancer as people that smoke or people that drink. But actually, HPV-related throat cancer has surpassed even cervical cancer in the U.S.,
Wow. Okay. And I was going to say, what sorts of cancer would affect somebody's head and neck? I mean, we're not talking brain brain cancer here.
Not brain cancer, really anything that is in the head and neck region. So we think about a sore in the mouth or, you know, a voice box cancer, the lining of the nose, as well as the lining of the back of the tongue and the tonsils.
Yeah. And how are these screenings done? I mean, for you just to look? I mean, what can you see?
Yeah, that's a great question. It's no needles, no machines. It's just a very quick, painless exam of the mouth, throat, and neck region just to pick up any concerning findings. And for things that we find any concerning findings, then we schedule a formal follow-up to sort of talk patients through that.
All right. And I was going to say, you would be able to see that. Would somebody else be able to do their own screening, you know, a lot like women do for breast cancer?
Yes, yeah, I think that's very important. I think always doing a neck exam and kind of palpating for any lymph nodes. Of course, lymph nodes are very common, especially this past year in cold and flu season, but lymph nodes that stick around for, you know, more than 2 or 3 months that are also accompanied by a sore throat that just won't go away, those are people we're mostly concerned about.
And how would you know sore throat versus... that's an allergic symptom as well.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yeah. Very common symptom, which is difficult. But, you know, that's a lot of people come see me and they're completely fine and it just gives a peace of mind. But there are those patients that I had one patient that thought she had trigeminal neuralgia when really she had an HPV-related tonsil cancer. So it's important just to get screened. It's quick. And, you know, even if you can't make the screening on Friday, we're always happy to see you just for a quick exam.
Sure. And so what would people look for as they're kind of checking their neck? I mean, you can probably feel a sore in your mouth, but...
That's yeah. Right, yeah. Swollen lymph node that just won't go down.
Okay. Yes. Let's talk a little bit more about the HPV vaccine. I mean, it was developed to prevent cervical cancer, but it's... Again, like you mentioned, it's really making its mark in these head and neck cancers.
Yes, most people don't realize that it's actually more common. And the unfortunate thing is the cervical cancer, especially HPV-related cervical cancer, has a formal screening test. That's the pap smear that everyone thinks about. So everyone thinks that HPV is more of a female, you know, cancer to worry about cervical cancer. But unfortunately, in head and neck, there's no formal routine screening test, so which is why these annual screening tests and just getting checked is so important. And HPV is a very common virus. I think over, you know, 99% of adults that are sexually active have had the virus at some point in their life. Majority of patients clear it with their immune system, but there's these patients that we worry about that cancers that develop from HPV can take, you know, 10 to 30 years to fully develop in the tonsils and specifically in the back of the tongue.
Yeah. The HPV vaccine, though, is given only to females, though, right?
It's given to boys as well. Oh. Most people don't realize that. Yes, we ideally would like to give the vaccine from age 9 to 12, but it is approved up to 26. And in some cases, adults may want to choose to get it even up to 45.
Yeah, there was a lot of controversy about the vaccine. It's been cleared?
Yes, yeah, very safe. Use, no risk, but yes, we do recommend it for, you know, starting at age 9 and up to 12, especially before, you know, adults become sexually active.
And I think some parents are maybe a little bit nervous to give it to their children that young. Just what? Because we're doing this vaccine, why? To prevent you from cancer when you're an adult?
Or? Exactly. The most effective time to give it is before people get the virus. And so that's why it's so important to start early. And it's very safe. It's been around for a long, long time, as you mentioned, with cervical cancer. But it has been proven to be safe in, you know, males as well.
Yeah. So what is the most common head and neck cancer?
The most common head and neck cancer in the back of the throat, it's called the oropharynx or the tonsils, the back of the tongue, is actually HPV-related squamous cell carcinoma. But in the oral cavity and in the voice box, that's more non-HPV-related. That's more common in, you know, people that smoke or people that drink that we see those.
Okay, the smoking cancers. I get, just because there's so many carcinogens in smoking.
That's right.
But alcohol. Tell me about that.
Alcohol potentiates the effect of cigarette, and so both of those combined together can increase the risk of developing cancer.
Okay. All right. Anything else you want to tell us?
I think just want to encourage patients and our neighbors to kind of come to this community, even if you think you're not at risk. It really is for anyone. It's a quick, painless, you know, exam of the head and neck, and most importantly, it's totally free for community.
Okay. So you're going to be doing it along with your...
My partner, Anthony Sanchez, who's a head and neck surgeon. He's primarily based in Salt Lake City, but yes, both of us together will be offering the screening for people.
Okay. Again, it's Friday, 9 to noon at your Heber Clinic.
Heber Clinic on Route 40.
Route 40. And yeah. People can just
look stop by.
ENT
Center of Utah.
Okay. Correct. Dr. Elizabeth Ritter, thanks so much for your time.
Thank you so much.
Well, a Park City man is facing 10 felony child sexual abuse charges after local police were tipped off by national authorities. KPCW's Parker Malatesta has this report.
Park City police arrested 29-year-old Hector Escobar Cabral at his home in Silver Creek Village last week for alleged child sex abuse. Cabral is now facing 10 second-degree felony charges for sexual exploitation of a minor in 3rd District Court. According to a probable cause affidavit, Google reported suspicious activity in files containing child pornography to the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children in November 2024. The cyber tip included IP addresses that geolocated the activity to the Park City area. A months-long investigation has led police to tie more than 360 illegal photos and videos to Cabral. Officers searched Cabral's home on Serviceberry Drive April 16th. He admitted to having pornographic materials involving children and said he had never inappropriately touched a child, according to the affidavit. Police say Cabral was using the messaging app Telegram to share and obtain child porn. Officers arrested Cabral and booked him into the Summit County Jail, where he is being held without bail. Cabral's initial court appearance is Tuesday, where he could face years of jail time. A second-degree felony carries 1 to 15 years in prison with up to $10,000 in fines. Parker Malatesta, KPCW News.
And a Heber City man is facing felony charges after he allegedly hit a biker with his pickup truck on purpose, then fled the scene. KPCW's Grace Dorfler has details.
43-year-old Heber resident Lauren Ray Russell is being held without bail in the Wasatch County Jail after allegedly accelerating toward a biker in his truck, breaking the man's leg. Police say Russell then drove away. According to an arrest affidavit filed Sunday in 4th District Court, Russell was leaving the UPS store in downtown Heber on the afternoon of April 13th. Russell allegedly stopped his Chevy Silverado on the sidewalk at the intersection of 600 South and 100 East. A biker riding down the sidewalk went around the truck, hit the hood with his hand, and kept biking away. The affidavit says Russell then turned his truck toward the biker, accelerated, struck him, and left the scene. A Heber police officer responded after the biker called for medical attention. The officer said he saw acceleration marks on the ground at the scene of the hit and run. The biker told police April 19th that his leg is broken and might need surgery. He said he wanted to pursue charges. Heber police used security camera footage from the UPS store to identify the vehicle, as well as an anonymous tip from an employee who provided the truck's license plate number. When arrested Sunday, Russell allegedly told officers he felt threatened by the biker and hurried away without realizing he had hit the man. In the affidavit, the arresting officer wrote, "I questioned why, if he felt threatened, he had not called law enforcement. He admitted that he hadn't thought about it." The officer added that after watching the video and seeing how hard the man was struck, he didn't believe Russell's story. Russell was charged Monday with aggravated assault resulting in serious bodily injury, a second-degree felony, and failure to remain at the scene of an accident involving serious injury, a third-degree felony. He was also charged with an infraction for failing to yield the right-of-way. He's scheduled to make an initial appearance in court Wednesday morning. The alleged road rage incident comes as a different high-profile road rage case makes its way through 4th District Court. Greg Kyle DeBoer was charged with felony obstruction of justice in December after he buried the gun he said he used to fatally shoot Hideout resident Patrick Hayes. DeBoer claimed he fired in self-defense and was not charged in connection with Hayes' death. The preliminary hearing for the DeBoer case is also Wednesday. Grace Dorfler, KPCW News.
And locals got one last day of skiing and riding at Park City Mountain yesterday. KPCW's Connor Thomas reports. It was quiet, cold, and windy first thing off.
The wind chill was 38 degrees when lifts fired up for the last day of the season at Park City Mountain Monday morning. But the sun and spirits were bright.
I hope everyone knows how lucky we all are to be here. It's amazing.
The fresh air up at altitude, at least, and the endless outdoor recreation opportunities. Heaven on earth.
That's native Chicagoan Martha Resk, who just moved to Park City from Key West. The cold weather made for crusty conditions early on, an ironic ending to a season with significant warm spells that melted the otherwise slightly below average snowfall. It was a weird year, remarked Corey Jones from Salt Lake.
I don't know how you could summarize that year.
Ski patrol on strike, short snow.
With no snow.
How's today? How are the conditions today?
Oh, today's beautiful. It's beautiful every day I'm skiing.
That was his brother, Kirk, too. The snow softened up by late morning, giving way to the sound of slush underfoot. The resort, which supports KPCW through its Epic Promise Foundation, had some final day freebies. Hot chocolate at the base, a DJ at Miners Camp, and an afternoon concert outside Legacy Lodge. Sterling Simmons from Bountiful got the music started early. Braving the cold in shorts and a tank top, he's been bringing a trombone to Park City's closing day 3 years running. He says he likes to play engine noises, and when his dad falls over, the National Ability Center was also out on the slopes, minus the familiar orange jackets, for an employee ski day. Program and Education Director Tracy Meyer says 2024-25 might have been the NAC's biggest season yet.
We're still counting numbers, but it's looking like over 5,000 lessons this season alone, with a ton of overnight groups, and so we're out here today to celebrate.
Park City Mountain's own ski school stayed open until the very end. Instructor Sava Shantakia said more than a dozen skiers booked a lesson Monday and a few snowboarders, but he got called off and decided to ride for a bit. He and other mountain employees get the mountain to themselves Tuesday for the resort's employee ski day. Fellow snowboarders Maddox Burge and Horace Williams plan to hit a mix of groomed runs and park terrain on their last day. KPCW asked Williams to describe conditions in a word.
Loose.
Payday, Bonanza, Silverlode, and First Time Express, and Three Kings were open Monday. The Canyons Village side, the resort, had closed a day earlier on Easter Sunday. Connor Thomas, KPCW News.
Well, Park City officials continue to work on a broad plan to remake the Park City area, and the city is taking a piecemeal approach. One major element of what Park City calls the Main Street Area Plan is a proposed gondola that would link Old Town to Deer Valley's Stowe Park. The connection is seen as a tool to maintain and increase vibrancy on Main Street ahead of the 2034 Winter Olympics. City data shows that 23% of Main Street visitors come from Deer Valley. That number is expected to increase once the ski resort develops its new base village at Snow Park. The idea initially involved building a gondola terminal on the Brewpub parking lot located at the top of Park City's Main Street. Following direction from the Park City Council, staff now exploring other sites in Old Town, including various locations on Main Street and the entirety of Sweet Alley. The City Council is scheduled to receive an update on the gondola project at its meeting May 23rd. Park City is moving faster with other elements of the Main Street area plan as directed by the City Council. On Monday, the city's expected to issue a request for bids from engineering firms to conduct a transportation and circulation analysis for Main Street and Sweet Alley. The study will involve a topographical survey, concepts for new street designs, and a preliminary construction schedule. With the guidance of other mountain towns, city staff also exploring ways that fossil fuel-free resources could be used for melting snow in the Main Street area. The town of Vail has had heated streets in its pedestrian core since the early 2000s. According to a staff report, Vail uses an ambient temperature loop instead of natural gas. City staff also evaluating geothermal energy for snow melting and other uses such as heating and cooling businesses.